Welcome to Between the Lines, presenting news and analysis of critical issues affecting our region, the nation, and the world. This week we present Dr. Rania Masri of Al Auda, the Palestine Right to Return Coalition, who comments on the deepening crisis in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, intensified by Israeli army raids into several West Bank cities. John Burroughs, executive director with the Lawyers Committee on Nuclear Policy, who examines the Pentagon's Nuclear Posture Review, which recommended the development of a new generation of battlefield-ready nuclear weapons. And Robert Rabin of the Committee for the Rescue and Development of Vieques, who talks about the recent arrests of women of the Puerto Rican Independence Party as they carried out civil disobedience against the next wave of military maneuvers on Vieques by the U.S. Navy. But first, we begin with a summary of some of the week's underreported news stories.
The Pentagon sparked international outrage when it released photos of Al-Qaeda prisoners in handcuffs at Camp X-Ray at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. The prisoners were on their knees, their eyes were covered by goggles, and their ears were tightly muffled. The World Press Review reports that critics consider this treatment by American authorities to be sensory deprivation and a cruel form of torture. This is not a new technique and has been used before by Western nations. A 1974 book titled The Guinea Pigs shocked readers in England with tales of sensory deprivation experiments carried out against 14 Irish Republican Army inmates by British authorities. The book, written by John McGuffin, an ex-IRA prisoner, sold 20,000 copies but was taken out of bookstores because of pressure exerted by British officials. The book was reissued in 1981, but with the most damning material taken out. The ruckus did force the British government to ban the use of psychological torture, and the government later paid $5 million in damages to torture victims. Although the International Red Cross has had access to the Pentagon-run prison camp, human rights monitors complain that prisoners, while no longer subjected to sensory deprivation techniques, are living in what amounts to open-air cells resembling dog kennels. The Economist magazine reports that the conflict diamond trade is still thriving in many African nations, with the proceeds going to fund rebel groups and illicit diamond traders. According to the latest data, the Central African Republic, or CAR, only officially exported 500,000 carats of jewel-quality diamonds to the noted diamond markets in Antwerp, Belgium. But reports from the diamond exchange show that 900,000 carats of fine diamonds were exported from the African country. Regional observers say that diamond smugglers have long prospered in the CAR. Some groups now mix uncut diamonds from Africa war zones with local stones and export them to European diamond exchanges. Officially, the government of Ange Félix Pataz, president of the Central African Republic, wants to clean up the conflict diamond mess. The government is pushing for tougher standards in granting diamond mining permits and seeking to create a certificate of origin system to make sure imported conflict diamonds are not mixed with those mined in the CAR. 2 years ago, the state of California began to enforce some of the toughest laws placed on managed care companies in the country, including setting up independent review boards to investigate HMO medical decisions. In response to a series of fines imposed by the newly created California Department of Managed Health Care, HMOs are going to court to dispute the fines and restrict the ability of the new state agency to challenge HMO medical decisions. Last fall, California's largest HMO, Kaiser Permanente, filed a suit in federal court seeking to reverse a $1.1 million fine it received as a result of the deaths of three people in a hospital that Kaiser admits was overcrowded. Now, Kaiser says because the patients were covered by Medicare, the state has no right to review the cases. Kaiser's million-dollar fine was the largest issued by the California HMO agency. Interestingly, the HMO is not denied the charges, but complains in its federal lawsuit that the State Department of Managed Health Care has shown excessive zeal in protecting patients' rights. Reformer Jamie Court of the Foundation for Taxpayer and Consumer Rights says the HMO is seeking to put itself above the law in every jurisdiction where the public challenges it. This week's news summary was compiled by Bob Nixon. For Between the Lines, I'm Denise Manzari.
After a string of Palestinian suicide bombings which killed dozens of civilians in Tel Aviv, Jerusalem, and Haifa, Israeli tanks and troops moved into several West Bank cities in what the government of Ariel Sharon described as a defensive measure designed to destroy the infrastructure of terrorism. As Israeli troops rounded up hundreds of people and broke into homes to conduct searches, human rights monitors reported many Palestinians had been killed and wounded in a series of street battles. Other observers accused the Israeli military of carrying out summary executions. Shortages of food and lack of medical care is exacerbating the situation. Surrounded by Israeli tanks and confined to several rooms in his Ramallah headquarters, Yasser Arafat received unexpected visitors when 40 international solidarity activists marched past Israeli soldiers with the intent of acting as human shields against further assaults on the Palestinian leader. Other peace activists were shot and injured by Israeli troops when they marched in the West Bank town of Beit Jalal. Israel has now banned journalists from the conflict zones. Between the Lines' Scott Harris spoke with Dr. Rania Masri of Al Auda, the Palestine Right to Return Coalition, who comments on the deepening crisis in the Israeli-Palestinian conflict and reaction to the escalating violence in the Arab world.
Well, I'm truly terrified, and I'm terrified because of a number of reasons. First of all, we right now have the Israeli military occupying army not only in Ramallah and El Bira, but also in Beit Sahour and Nablus. These are all relatively big cities in the region. And what they are doing when they go in is they're forcing all the foreigners and all the journalists to go out and basically then conducting massacres in silence. We have found out that they killed 25 Palestinians. The way they kill them is they undress them and kill them and torture them to such an effect that when the ambulances pick them up, they cannot even identify their bodies. And there have been more and more of these massacres. The Israeli military occupying army is actually using Palestinians as human shields while they themselves continue their own killing of Palestinians. I mean, it's absolutely horrific. They're not only committing mass massacres, but they're also cutting off all electricity and water and all access to food. They are going into the banks and stealing Palestinian properties from the banks, as well as destroying Palestinian property, as well as destroying the basic infrastructure. And this is only what we know, and what is more horrific is what we don't know. Again, there probably are massacres that are being committed by the dozens that we have yet to discover.
Dr. Masri, what, if anything, do you think the United States should do or could do at this point? The Bush administration has been criticized for its handling of the crisis in the Middle East. Basically, the criticism amounts to disengagement from the whole process.
I wouldn't say that the U.S. is disengaged. The U.S. is very much engaged, and the U.S. is engaged by giving a completely green light to the war criminal Ariel Sharon to continue his massacre of Palestinians, a massacre that began in 1948 and that he has continued until today. And I say a green light because not only did President Bush not condemn the killing of Palestinian civilians and only condemn the killing of Israeli civilians as if for somehow Palestinian life is worth less, but President Bush has also, and we have to keep this, remember this very clearly, this administration, like previous administrations, is the one that is militarily funding the Israeli occupation forces. They are the ones that have granted the Israeli occupation forces with the Apache helicopters and the tanks and the 500-pound bombs and the flechette bombs and the sniper guns and numerous other kinds of ammunition. They are the ones that are protecting Israel under the UN Security Council by not allowing enforcement of more than 73 UN Council resolutions. So second to holding the Israeli government responsible for the military occupation, a 35-year-old military occupation, and for the massacres that are continuing, our own government is also responsible. It is very much engaged in this process, and unfortunately, it is engaged in a very illegal activity.
I wonder if you would comment on what many see as Yasser Arafat's responsibility for the continuing string of suicide bombings that have taken hundreds of lives in Israel itself and among the settlements in the West Bank and Gaza. Because the fact that many Americans are horrified by the suicide bombers, they can't understand why some of these people are treated as heroes by many other Palestinians. What's your response to that?
Well, let me try to explain this. As appalling as we may find these suicide missions to be, if we want them to stop, we have to be calling for the end of the military occupation. It is just that simple. And I would also appeal to people that if you find these suicide missions to be appalling, which they are, because innocent civilians are being killed, then we should, in the same light, find the complete terrorization of the hundreds of thousands of Palestinians living in complete siege to be just as horrific and just as appalling. When we have Apache helicopters being utilized against residential neighborhoods, against refugee camps, when we have Israelis going up on the homes of Palestinians and not allowing them to step outside their home and being shot, when ambulance drivers are being shot and when the wounded are being shot within the ambulances, when the Israeli military forces go into hospitals with their dogs and not allow the doctors to aid the wounded within the hospitals, we need to find that just as horrific. And what we need to find more horrific is that the suicide missions are conducted by individuals, and therefore individuals should be held responsible. But these aggressions and these atrocities are being conducted by an entire government. This is state-sponsored terrorism, and that should be tremendously more appalling to us as Americans.
Dr. Masri, if this violence is not reined in, where do you think the current state of affairs is taking the Israelis, the Palestinians, and the rest of the world?
It is taking the entire region into chaos and into instability, the entire region. So long as the Israeli military forces continue their aggression and continue their occupation, there will be more bloodshed on both sides. There will be much, much more Palestinians killed, but there will also be Israeli civilians who will be killed. And we are noticing that the Arab people are rising up into the streets, and they are demanding that the Arab government step in and stop this atrocity. So long as this aggression is continuing against the Palestinians, there will be greater uproar within the Arab countries themselves to demand that their Arab governments do something. And so long as the Arab governments remain either impotent or silent, there will be still more chaos within those countries. This is not a conflict that is sequestered only within Palestine and only within Israel. This is a conflict that will spread and already has spread across the entire Arab world.
That was Dr. Rania Masri of Al Auda, the Palestine Right to Return Coalition. Visit the coalition's website at www.al-awda.org or www.electronicintifada.org. Major news outlets recently reported that the Pentagon has recommended the development of a new generation of nuclear weapons for use against U.S. enemies such as Iraq, Iran, Syria, Libya, and North Korea, as well as Russia and China. The secret document leaked to the press, called the Nuclear Posture Review, calls for research that would produce low-yield nuclear weapons that will be capable of destroying underground bunkers built to protect an enemy's leadership and biological, chemical, or nuclear weapons stockpiles. Speaking for the Bush administration, Secretary of State Colin Powell maintains the document is simply part of prudent military planning. The idea that the U.S. may be planning to build battlefield-ready nukes that could be launched against non-nuclear adversaries has alarmed leaders around the world, including those of Russia and China. Many arms control advocates fear that the U.S. move contemplating the use of such weapons could scuttle arms agreements across the globe and trigger a new arms race. The wartime use of nuclear weapons has been considered unthinkable since the U.S. first used atomic bombs to destroy Hiroshima and Nagasaki during World War II. Between the Lines, Scott Harris spoke with John Burroughs, executive director with the Lawyers Committee on Nuclear Policy, who examines the Pentagon's Nuclear Posture Review and the consequences for the international movement working for nuclear nonproliferation.
It's really just crazy at a time when it is so urgent for the United States to be trying to gain international cooperation to stop the spread of nuclear weapons and to stop nuclear materials and explosives from getting into the hands of terrorists. Here the United States is saying these weapons are useful or potentially useful for the United States in various, you know, military confrontations. You know, the one of the favorite ones is North Korea would invade South Korea or Iraq would attack Israel. If the weapons are potentially useful for the United States, then other countries are going to think, they can be useful for us too. So it's really crazy, and it's caused a lot of problems already for the U.S. internationally. And so Rumsfeld and Powell have been saying, oh, this is just prudent planning, this is just the military getting ready. But what would the U.S. say if other countries were doing, quote, prudent planning of this kind?
The Bush administration, after the leaks were made to the news media about the nuclear posture review, tried to reassure the public or the international community that this really was no departure from previous U.S. administration's policy on nuclear weapons. Is that true in your view?
There's a lot of continuity. In some ways, what is surprising about this nuclear posture review is that the plans are on the front page of the newspaper. People who specialize in this sort of thing, like myself, have known very well that the U.S. had plans of this kind all along. However, it does represent a sort of pushing the envelope. For instance, here are the scenarios identified for possible use. First of all, there's the massive retaliation strategy with respect to Russia and China, and that edges over into a strategy for attacking the nuclear forces of the other side, a preemptive strike. Okay, those plans have always existed, or they've existed for decades now. But then they also talk about being able to attack targets which could, quote, withstand a non-nuclear attack. In other words, a hardened, deeply buried targets. They also talk about retaliation against biological or chemical attack, and they refer to attack in U.S. using nuclear weapons in response to surprising military developments. So here's the difference. In the past, the United States has hinted that or implied that it might use nuclear weapons in retaliation to a biological or chemical attack by a country which doesn't possess nuclear weapons. Now it's stated baldly and flatly, and there's also reference to these other scenarios of preemptive attack of against underground bunkers and in case of surprising military developments. Well, that could cover a whole lot of things. So it's like widening out existing circumstances. But again, as I say, the timing is just extraordinarily bad.
There are many citizens in this country after the September 11th attacks that will feel that it's justified for the U.S. to threaten to use nuclear weapons to protect ourselves from future attacks by terrorists who might use nuclear weapons, biological or chemical weapons. How do you respond to those Americans who feel the Bush administration is justified here?
The thing that the United States is most vulnerable to is a nuclear attack. It could be possible for a state or a terrorist group that wants to threaten the United States or attack the United States to get nuclear weapons into this country. And there have already been serious concerns about Al-Qaeda getting nuclear weapons into this country. Fortunately, they don't seem to have been founded on reality, but it was a serious concern. So now the United States says, boy, nuclear weapons are so important for our security, we're going to draw up plans and develop capabilities to be able to use them in many, many different kinds of circumstances. The signal that sends to the world is nukes forever, and it also sends signal to the world that other countries should think about getting their own. And it also, at a minimum, makes it harder to have international cooperation in preventing the spread of nuclear weapons and controlling nuclear materials, which needs to be done in Russia for sure, but also needs to be done elsewhere. The fact is the United States has plenty of capabilities to respond to any sort of threat, and I'm talking about non-nuclear capabilities. So when the U.S. indicates that it may need nuclear capabilities, it's just raising the value of a kind of weapon which it's in the U.S. interest, it's in Americans' interest, and it's in the world's interest to contain and eventually eliminate those weapons.
That was John Burroughs, Executive Director with the Lawyers Committee on Nuclear Policy. Call the committee at area code 212-818-1861. Or visit their website at www.lcnp.org. On Monday, April 1st, U.S. Navy planes began dropping inert bombs on the firing range near Camp Garcia on Vieques, the tiny island off the coast of Puerto Rico. These exercises, the first carried out by the U.S. military since October, resulted in the arrest of five women from the Puerto Rican Independence Party, who entered Navy land in an expected new wave of civil disobedience. The women, led by PRIP Vice President Marcia Delorda Santiago, allegedly broke through the base fence line before the Navy began exercises with planes and ships from the USS George Washington Battle Group. The Navy maintains Vieques is the crown jewel of the Caribbean to carry out its military exercises and denies claims by the island's inhabitants, citing scientific reports that it is contaminating the environment, resulting in increased cancers, asthma, and other illnesses. In January, the Navy relocated maneuvers scheduled for Vieques to North Carolina's Camp Lejeune and Florida's Pine Castle Range. The exercises used live bombs, which the Navy said were essential prior to deployment in Afghanistan. Robert Rabin is with the Committee for the Rescue and Development of Vieques. He spoke with Between the Lines' Denise Manzari about the protesters' determination to end Navy maneuvers prior to the 2003 end date offered by the Bush administration.
In this six-month interim, there have been negotiations and discussions in Washington and lobbying on the part of our community, the mayor, the governor. We had hoped that we had seen the end of the Navy's use of Vieques for bombing, but unfortunately, in the middle of March, we received the notification of this 22-day Navy exercises that began yesterday with very scarce bombing, but today, and as we speak right now, there is cannon blasts that are vibrating the building we're in right now.
Do you want to talk a little bit about those cancer deaths that occurred on one weekend about a month ago?
During the month of March, there was a period of about a week and a half where we had about a dozen deaths, and I believe it was eight or ten of those deaths were cancer victims. Very serious and alarming, the number of deaths due to cancer here in Vieques. In fact, the highest per capita cancer rate in all of Puerto Rico. And we attribute this to the military contamination. The bombing on the eastern end of Vieques has resulted in a 60 years accumulation of toxics, including heavy metals, nitrates, nitrites, uranium oxide. The Navy has admitted to the use of depleted uranium weapons here. And then all of these materials, airborne particles of these materials, can reach easily the civilian sector downwind.
There were five people arrested, and I believe these were five women from the Puerto Rican Independence Party who entered Navy land on Monday. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yesterday morning, these were the first people to be arrested in this campaign of civil disobedience. The vice president of the Puerto Rican Independence Party, Maria de Lourdes Santiago, and four other women officials of the Independence Party were arrested somewhere between 9 and 10 in the morning, after having penetrated the Navy's restricted area here in what is known as Camp Garcia. They are now in the federal prison in San Juan.
What are they being charged with?
They're being charged with trespassing. They have all refused to pay bail and have refused to recognize the jurisdiction of the federal court here in Puerto Rico.
And despite being handcuffed and in plastic manacles, they still managed to shout Vieques si Marina no fuera la Marina, which is Navy get out of Vieques.
That's correct. I think it's important to point out that when people are arrested here, they are handcuffed with plastic handcuffs, but then once they are turned over to the federal marshals on the main island, they are shackled at the feet and the waist and hands, and that is what awaits all of the people who have been arrested here, over 1,000 people now.
The Committee for the Rescue and Development representative in Washington, D.C., lawyer Flavio Cumpiano, initiated a campaign to have congressmen and women and other elected officials write to President Bush, urging him to order the cessation of bombing on Vieques. Can you explain how that is progressing and what support you're getting?
There have been already, I think there are 10 Congress people who have now written letters to the president. And this is, of course, in addition to 100 Congress people who signed a letter to the president asking for the immediate and permanent cessation of military activity last year in February of 2001. But this recent project of Flavio Cumpiano now has positive results, and we would hope to see in the coming days, more Congress people write to the president.
There's also been criticism of the governor, Sila Calderon of Puerto Rico, that she is basically identical to that of ex-governor Pedro Rosselló, who is asking for calm and tranquility while the Navy continues these bombings on Vieques.
This is something that we denounced today at a press conference. For us, it's a very difficult situation to listen to the governor, who basically won the election based upon her support of the Vieques struggle and her criticism of Dr. Pedro Rosselló, the ex-governor, whose position was to allow the Navy to continue to bomb until 2003, and now the governor has adopted that same position. So it's certainly unacceptable and insulting to our community.
The activists occupied the range almost a year after the death of David Sanes in 1999. It's 3 years ago. They were forcibly removed by U.S. Marshals, and then a new surge of activists, including Robert F. Kennedy and Reverend Al Sharpton, were jailed for entering Navy land. But since September 11th, things have changed.
Everyone knows we called for a moratorium on civil disobedience in September and October as a show of solidarity with the people who were affected by the attacks on 11 September. But we said very clearly that in the next maneuvers we would continue civil disobedience because the injustice of the Navy presence and activities is just the same as it is now, as it was before September 11th.
That was Robert Rabin of the Committee for the Rescue and Development of Vieques. For more information, visit their website at www.viequeslibre.org. You've been listening to Between the Lines, a weekly program presenting news and analysis of critical issues affecting our region, the nation, and the world. Between the Lines is produced by WPKN Radio's Public Affairs and News Departments. If you have suggestions for topics and guests or would like a cassette copy of today's program, please contact Between the Lines by calling area code 203-331-9756 or write to Between the Lines care of WPKN Radio, 244 University Avenue, Bridgeport, Connecticut, 06604. You can also visit our website at www.btlonline.org. Our theme music was written and performed by Mikita. This week's program was produced by Scott Harris with the assistance of Sasha Cousineau, Anna Manzo, Harry Minot, Denise Manzari, Bob Nixon, and Jeff Yates. For Between the Lines, I'm Archibald Currie.